Hey, everybody. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix, the program that dares you to think outside of the box of convention and soar in the free thought zone of eagles. This is Patricia Corey. I am the author of the Assyrian Revelations. I hope by now you know me, but always remember my website, www.assyrianrevelations.net. And to those of you who are faithful readers, I do apologize that it's been a lifetime since I've sent out my newsletter. I promise I'm getting to it. I'm just under siege with every kind of writer's deadline. But I do promise it's coming soon. Okay, that's enough for the formalities. What's called 1111, the time prompt phenomenon. It's co-authored by two fascinating people, Marie D. Jones, who is with me today, and Larry Flaxman, who I believe is not, but she'll be telling us more about him. But let me tell you, before she comes on, about Marie D. Jones. She is the author of a number of books. Whew! Let's see, we've got 2013, End of Days or a New Beginning, Envisioning the World After the Events of 2012, which was just released in July. She's, boy, all over the place. She's got so many books, I can't name them all. One I do love that she wrote with her father, Dr. John Savino, was titled Looking for God in All the Right, in the Wrong Places. And I think I've got that somewhere in my bookshelf, but unread to date. She is quite a prolific writer. She's a New Thought metaphysics minister. She has an extensive background in things we love, metaphysics, spiritual study, and the paranormal. And she spent 15 years as a field investigator for the Mutual UFO Network in Southern California. Boy, we're going to have fun, so gather your friends around and join me to introduce Marie D. Jones.
Hello.
How are you, Marie? For a minute there, I thought you'd left us.
No, I'm here.
Well, we have a little delay in the telephone. We have a little delay in the telephone, so you and I have to remember to allow for that little space. And to those of you who are listening, if you do hear a little space between speaking, this is not a disconnection. It's just allowing for technology to do its bit. So, okay, Marie, let's dive right in here. I've got to talk to you about so much because I would like to know, for example, have you been in Las Vegas for the UFO conference?
No, I've been invited several times by people that have been speaking. But no, I haven't made it out there yet. And I live very close. I live in San Diego, California. But I've been so busy with writing and promoting my books that, it's hard to get out of my house sometimes.
I hear you. I'm in the middle of, I've just finished one book. I've just finished a contribution to a co-author book. And I'm now doing two different books. So
yes.
I'm like,
so
okay.
You know what it's like.
I know. Well, I mentioned that because a dear friend, Patty Greer, who you may have heard of, just did a film. And it was called 2012. We're already in it. And I was one of the key speakers in that film, and it won Best Feature Film at the Las Vegas Convention. So congratulations, Patty!
Yay! I am very much behind on my reading other books and seeing films and things. I really have to catch up, and I'm sure you find that you get so involved in what you're doing that you tend to get way behind on whatever what all your peers and colleagues are up to.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just can't break that. When the stream starts to flow, you cannot interrupt it.
Especially when you have a deadline.
Especially when you have a deadline, which unfortunately at the moment I have a number of.
Right.
So you've got another book coming up?
I have another book coming out again with Larry Flaxman, who I'm partnering with on a number of things, and that'll be in August. It's called The Resonance Key, Exploring the Links Between Vibration, Consciousness, and the Zero Point Grid.
Wow, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, that's going to be a real good one. We're gonna break a lot of new ground with that book. It's going to be a very fascinating subject matter.
Well, I'm sure I'm going to have you back on for that one, so please make a note on your calendar.
Absolutely.
Have your publisher send me a reader copy and plan for another encounter on Beyond the Matrix.
Absolutely.
But now let's talk about 1111, which is a great book and also groundbreaking. And I'll start by asking you, I'm concerned very much with how people who come on my program perceive in the most positive way our passage from the point of view of the fated 2012 date and an extension beyond that time. And so the question of number, which is so fixed in people's minds at the moment, becomes a very exciting thing to discuss.
It does. And again, it is good to keep positive, because when we talk about 2012 and all the different mythologies and scenarios and prophecies and predictions, there's a lot of gloom and doom. And I don't think that that serves anybody. There's not a whole lot of basis for all of that gloom and doom to begin with. But the way that it spreads within our sort of fear-based society, I don't think is a good thing for people. There seems to be so much more positive that we can get out of what's coming, personally and collectively. That's what we should
be focusing on. And I do think more and more people are awakening to the potential of what we can create and owning up to their own part in this.
I think people are being forced to either accept that or continue to live the way they have and be miserable. It's almost as if people are being backed into a corner and being forced to make a choice. Are they going to...
Well, it's interesting that you would say that, because as I'm writing right now, this crash that has, the words are collapse, crash,
right.
Destruction.
Right.
But this, let's call it architected economic situation, does have that very positive aspect to it, in that it seems that as a race, as a species, we don't get really moving until we are up against the wall.
Absolutely. We're very lazy, and we're also very much comfort-oriented animals, in that we build our little bubble around ourselves, and we stay in that bubble no matter how miserable it gets in there, because of our fear of the unknown. And one thing that I'm really finding a lot of enjoyment out of is, with all this economic collapse, is that you're hearing these wonderful stories of people that are lost their job and their house and whatnot, but they're finally realizing, this is the time to do what I've always dreamed of doing. What else have I got to lose? And they're getting out
exactly.
there, and they're beginning to live their passion. And I think that that's a really great thing that we can take out of all the negative, something that we can take out that's positive.
Yes, and I do think that, you know, in the last few years, so many of the people I've encountered have said, I really would like to A, B, C, or D, but it's just, you know, I'm too scared to move. And
right.
so the universe is providing the impetus to get people moving. So I do agree that despite the gloom and doom, this economic manipulation, which I'm quite sure it is,
is
really serving the highest purpose, has in the end, everything does.
Yes. And with these...
It's pretty hard to recognize that sometimes when we see these dark ones doing their whatevers. But in the end, it's all moving up to the light.
Right. And interestingly, the people that are having these 1111 time prompts, which, you know, basically people all over the world have been seeing 1111 come up as a time over and over again, either 1111 a.m., 1111 p.m., or they see it on signs or on the computer screen or any kind of readout, is that we do get wake-up calls from the universe. We do get alerts and warnings, and we do get poked in the side. But a lot of people ignore it, and they continue to live the way they've been living, and they continue to not pursue what their intuition is telling them to pursue. And it's like, if you don't listen the first few times, then the signs are going to get even stronger. So if you don't listen when maybe you're getting some of these time prompts to pay attention to your life, to make some changes, the sign the universe gives you next may be that you're going to lose your house, or you're going to lose your job, or you're going to get sick, very sick, and then your back is against the wall. Finally, you're going to wake up and listen.
it's an amazing time. And, you know, it really is. You're really seeing an opportunity for the extreme polarity, recognizing that it's in your mind.
Right.
This is one of the greatest gifts we've been given at this time.
Well, so many of us like to look outside of ourselves for all of the answers. And I think what's happening now is that we're being reminded that we already have all of the answers within us. We're just not used to looking there.
Indeed. All right, so let's talk then how you feel that the power of numerology, which so many people are attracted to, including me, affects human life and your perception of the world around you.
Well, you know, a lot of scientists will sort of poo-poo numerology. They say it's not really, it's a pseudoscience. But the thing is that those same scientists will admit that all of life and all of reality and the way the universe was formed out of the Big Bang, it all has a mathematical basis to it. And numbers are incredibly important. They're also important to our everyday lives. I mean, we balance our checkbooks. We have our phone number. We have our IP address number on our computers. We live by numbers. We have a social security number, driver's license numbers. So numerology is simply a tool of divination that uses numbers to determine destiny and character and what vocation people should have or who they should marry, that kind of thing. So it's a divination system using something that science itself admits is possibly at the basis of all reality, and that is numbers.
The scientists really have to admit that, considering that even the element chart, the chart of the elements is nothing more than one atom of this and one atom of that,
right,
and together we get the myriad chemicals and substances that make up the world, our lives,
right,
our bodies.
But as soon as you mention something like predicting the future or divination or intuition, a lot of scientists will just shut down. But I think it's becoming more and more obvious that science and spirituality are the same end of one yardstick. It's one yardstick. It's got two different ends, but it's all a part of a whole object. And they're coming together more
Indeed.
And more. They're being bridged together more and more. So numerology...
Yes, in fact, I've had the great honor of having some of the world's brightest minds, like Michio Kaku, on the show.
Yes.
Do you know of Michio?
Wow, I absolutely do. I've quoted him throughout my books, and I just think he's amazing because there is a brilliant theoretical physicist who has the imagination and the ability to think outside of the box when a lot of his colleagues will absolutely refuse to do that.
Yeah, plus he has the spirit training because, as he says in one of his videos, I began with a basic conundrum of contradiction, and that being that on the one hand, I was raised as a Buddhist, where all that ever was and ever will be was the training for my spiritual understanding. And on the other hand, I was exploring the Big Bang.
Right,
exactly.
He gets to walk between two worlds and see how they're connected, whereas a lot of people are just so caught up in their one world, either spirituality, but they refuse to take a look at science, or they're caught up in science and they refuse to take a look at religion and spirituality and belief. And so those people that can walk both worlds have the biggest perspective of what reality is.
And indeed, now the veils are dropping. We're starting to see so much more. Why limit ourselves to any one way of perceiving reality? And that includes us, the metaphysicians, who have also rejected some of the science for so long. So
right.
It's a great time of opportunity all around.
It is, and I think it's a time when it requires a lot of courage to think in ways that you're not used to thinking. We get so bogged down in who we are, you know, what our religion is and our political affiliation and what we do for a living that we
And what we have.
Right, what we own, what we drive. But we need to start stretching outside of that and being open to ideas that we weren't open to before, because a lot of times you find out that they make more sense than you ever even imagined. They may actually make more sense than the ideas you've been holding on to.
As far as predicting from numerology,
uh-huh.
Sorry, we overlapped there. I think we overlapped, so we had a little gack in communication. I was just saying that to not understand or the potential for numerology giving you, I don't really like the word prediction, but a vibrational direction of where you're headed.
Right.
One needs to consider the Bible code, the Bible itself, and so many other sacred works, the Talmud, the Quran, and recognize that these books are being studied, they're being broken down vibrationally, and patterns emerge which predict the reality that we find ourselves in now.
Yes, and I would also
add to that. What do you make of the book, The Bible Code?
You know, I wrote about that in a couple of my books. The Bible Code itself has been applied to other texts, including some of the classics of literature and a couple of Stephen King novels. Again, it comes down to the brain's ability to find pattern, to identify order out of chaos. So regardless of who might have put the code in the Bible or who might have put the code in Moby Dick, because there was a code found in Moby Dick as well, it's the brain that has the ability to find the coded information. And what I think is fascinating about that is that there are patterns and sequences all around us. There are mysterious signs and synchronicities. And if our brain is not trained to see those patterns, to see those resonances and how things sync up, we could be missing some very vital information, not just about ourselves, but about all of reality, about our future, about our destinies. So the Bible Code, I think, speaks to the fact that the brain has the ability to find pattern and make meaning out of the pattern.
Okay, now here's a question for you, a philosophical question. Is it the brain finding the pattern, or is it we, the co-creators of divine life, creating those patterns through language? We, of course, the writers of the books.
Right.
Is this a process of not finding the code, but being the code in the sense that language communicates that divine wisdom within us?
Oh, absolutely. I think that both probably apply in different situations. I think there are times when, for example, if you look up at the sky and there are a lot of clouds, your brain will start to pick out patterns in the clouds, a rabbit, a horse, whatever. And that's an example of your brain just matrixing. It's looking for order out of chaos. But in other cases, yes, we could be the originators of the very pattern that other people's brains are perceiving. And it's a real fine line to try to determine which is which. What information are we receiving that we're giving meaning to that may not already be built in? And what information is coming from outside of us that has a very fixed meaning that might be coming from higher beings or our spirit guides or some sort of divine force that's trying to tell us something. And that's a real dilemma sometimes, trying to figure out, using your intuition and your discernment, to try to figure out if this is something my brain is telling me or is this something that my higher self or higher wisdom is telling me.
Indeed. What do you think about then, about the crop circles, which are absolutely representative of divine vibration, form, and ratio?
Again, yeah, it's sacred geometry at work. And my belief and my theory about crop circles has always been that whatever is putting them out there for us to see is using symbol and archetype and the kinds of things that appeal to our subconscious. Rather than having a crop circle that says, hello, or we're here, or something very direct and very distinct, these are symbols that appeal to us on a much deeper subconscious, maybe collective level. And that in itself is very exciting because if these are outside entities that are responsible for this, how do they know? They have to know how important our collective subconscious is to us as a species. enough to know that that is the language that we would all understand on some level. For example, if you have a crop circle and you have a word in English, there are going to be quite a number of people who won't understand it because they speak Chinese. If you have a crop circle...
And there's another thing to consider.
Right. So
even in our own earthly language systems, we don't always directly communicate. You've got syntactic patterns of language that are circular, that are wavy.
Exactly.
There's the Italian approach, which is just too many words in a sentence to make
sense.
I love
the gestures. I'm Italian, too.
So,
But yes, you're right. The
great thing about Italian is you don't have to hear anybody speak. You can just watch them with their hands.
Just watch their hands.
And you can get their drift.
But in
the case of the crop circles, I don't think we will ever see a direct, okay, here we are message.
Yeah.
The subtlety of universal language is most assuredly numerology, vibration, and ratio. And I'd like to get to, speaking of ratio, the number-based patterns in nature. I'm hoping you will talk to us in layman's terms about the Fibonacci sequence.
Right.
And the golden mean, because so many people have trouble understanding that.
They do. And again, everything comes down to numbers, measurements, patterns. Fibonacci was an Italian. He had a whole lot of different names. Leonardo Pisano was one of his many names. But basically, he was a mathematician. He was born in 1170 A.D., and he wrote about calculation, mathematics, and ratio. And he came up with a sequence of numbers. It's very simple. Basically, after the first two numbers, the next number becomes the sum of the previous two numbers. So I can read off some here for you. 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34. So basically, 34 is the sum of the two numbers before it, 21 and 13. 89.
Okay, and it keeps proportionally increasing.
And this proportion...
Now, how does it relate to the golden mean?
The golden mean or golden ratio is a ratio of 1 to 1.618, and this is a very natural ratio that is found on the human body and the proportion of parts of our bodies related to other parts of the bodies. In flowers, the amount of petals, in seashells, the way that the spiral begins in the center and the ratio at which it spirals outwards. So throughout nature, in art, architecture, we find that these patterns, these sequences create the most aesthetically beautiful and harmonious objects. They're just perfectly proportioned, you might say. So
and this being the divine proportion or the what I like to think of as the architect of life, what I interpret God to be.
Exactly. And it is referred to as the divine ratio, the divine proportion, because it's so aesthetically perfect, and it's found everywhere. It's found in art. It's found in science. It's found in nature. It's found in just about everything, including, again, as Da Vinci pointed out, our own human bodies. So it's interesting, again, how it all comes down to numbers, because for those of us that hated math in school, we really don't want to admit maybe we should have paid more attention.
I know. In fact, I'm one of those people. I just couldn't stand it. And now my life is so much about this, I just don't understand what made the shift into opening my mind to this beauty and discovery.
I think it's when you realize that math, what you learn in school is the rational stuff that you probably will never need. But once you realize that math itself, numbers itself, they can be beautiful because they speak of harmonious sequences. They speak of a sort of geometric underlying reality to everything. They take on a much more magical quality than they did in, like, fourth grade, where you're learning how to divide and, do your fractions.
And algebra.
Oh.
Well, I think we agree that it would be really wonderful if at some point in a child's training, they ran across a teacher who presented mathematics as the mystical journey through the splendor of nature and sacred geometry. Wouldn't it be great?
It would, and I have a 7-year-old son. He's in second grade, and I see his math work that he does. And I have to tell you, they're doing very advanced math, and they're really being pushed to do problems and concepts that are just very difficult for their grade level. But I have yet to see in any of his work mentions of sacred proportions or even the golden ratio. But I think maybe perhaps when you get to the college level or high school level that you know, there might be some mention of that in their textbooks.
But he has so you.
He does. And actually my son is lucky because he learns about all of this stuff through me. But there are a lot of kids out there that are missing the opportunity to see that math isn't just something that you have to struggle through to get a good grade. It could be the very basis of who we are and how we got here and why everything functions the way it does.
Indeed. And I'm going to put a call out to the mothers out there and the fathers out there listening to remind you that this is a great gift you can give the young. And you can learn so much more about it from Marie D. Jones's book. It's 1111, again, the time prompt phenomenon. I just want to interrupt our conversation to let you know that Marie has two different websites. One is Marie, www, of course, mariedjones.com. And another, which she'll tell us about if we get to it in time, is www.paraexplorers.com. It's a beautiful manual of wisdom, and it's something that you really want to have in your libraries of wisdom. So I really recommend that you get out and get this wonderful book. All right, sorry for that little plug for you, but
thank you.
I felt it was important because often people come in the middle of the show, and we need to let them know what we're doing, what we're talking about, and with whom. All right, so let's go back to this discussion of the ratios, secrets of sacred geometry, the fractals, fractal mathematics. What's happening with these fractals, and how can we understand them?
Well, here again, this speaks to the coming year of 2012 and the idea that time is accelerating, events are accelerating as we go through cycles of time. And a fractal is really nothing more than a cyclical pattern that repeats itself predictably. So in terms of 2012, what we might be looking at is, as we get closer to that date, time is accelerating. The amount of information that we are being forced to process with our brains is accelerating. It's accelerating exponentially. Technology is accelerating. In fact, the idea is that maybe where it used to take 50 years for the rate of technology to double, now it's happening every 25 years and then every 5 years, to the point where it can happen in 1 year, where we literally see the capacity of computer processing double, the type of technology that we're dealing with double. Everything is speeding up, but it's following a very cyclical pattern. And the time model that is created from that is called fractal time. The idea, again, too, is that it's leading up to what's called a singularity, when things are going to be happening so fast, it's just going to become infinite. And I do see that happening, the way technology is exploding. I mean, we have things coming out, new things coming out monthly, whereas before it might have taken 10, 20 years before we saw a new, faster computer. Or, you know, we went from big, huge cell phones to these little teeny things that now act as mini computers. And by next year, they're probably going to be the size of a fingernail. So we're seeing time and information speeding up quicker and quicker, and it's happening in shorter and shorter durations.
And how does this define or explain that commonality that we are feeling of those synchronistic moments which we used to call coincidences and we're now recognizing as synchronicity.
What happens is the more people that become aware of this, I think a lot of people will say that they feel something is happening. I've had so many people say to me, I feel like something is coming, but I can't quite put my finger on it. So the more and more people that, that become aware that there is a shift, the quicker that change will come about. And when we're talking about fractal time and we're talking about reaching the singularity, which some people believe will happen on the December 21st, 2012, which is the end date of the Mayan long count calendar, the idea is that if there's enough collective intention and belief that this change is going to occur, it actually brings the change about quicker and in a much deeper way. So if you've got a lot of people experiencing time prompts and synchronicities, and maybe they ignored them before, but now they're paying attention to them, they're actually incorporating them into their lives, they're paying attention to their intuition, it's leading us to a collective paradigm shift of what it means to be a human.
What do you mean exactly when you say time prompt?
A time prompt is like 11-11. Millions of people are reporting all over the world that they are seeing or waking up at the same time every night or seeing the same time every time they look at a clock.
Oh, okay.
As if they're being haunted by a particular time. And 11-11 is the most popular. And the reason why is because it's whatever is supposed to happen on December 21st, 2012, is said to happen at 11-11 because that is the moment when we go into the winter solstice of that particular year. So there's that association with 2012. But it's also possible that if enough people are seeing 11-11 and they tell their friends and family about it, then you've got other people who start to see it. It's almost like a contagious thing because we do know that belief and thought is contagious. You can spread thought, you can spread mood, you can spread emotion. So these time prompts are actually getting more and more popular. They're happening to more and more people, and they could be leading up to one of these big changes that's going to come according to fractal time, the fractal time theory. So when you have enough people expecting the same thing, it makes that shift easier to happen.
And that's what you refer to as a singularity, a great shift?
The singularity would be the moment that the shift occurred where time accelerates to the point where processing and information becomes infinite. There's also the threat that we might become so technologically advanced that it overtakes our humanity. And that would be another point of singularity. If we keep speeding up and accelerating the means of by which technology is running our lives, there's going to come a moment when it begins to completely overtake us and we no longer are in charge. And that's one of the darker sides of the whole idea of fractals and time wave theories, whatever you want to call it.
Well, there's no question. I, for one, am a great exponent of getting as far away from electronics as one can. And yet, of course, to exist in the world of today, I've got the computer and some of the other gadgets. But I think it's, you know, to be as the Buddhist way, the middle road, and to do the very best you can to stay grounded in the smell of the earth, the feet on the soil, as much as you can, bring yourself to nature and spend quiet time with nature to balance you out.
Absolutely. I totally agree. We've become more global because of the internet and our ability to call someone on a cell phone and in, you know, the other side of the world. But at the same time, we've become a much more isolated, unhappy, lonely species. And I say that accounts for a lot of the increases in anxiety-related illnesses and depression and autoimmune disorders. We're just not happy, even though now we can pretty much talk to anybody we want on the internet. We should be more in touch, and yet we are less in touch.
Well, sure, because we aren't really in touch. We're in a machine. It's
exactly.
A virtual reality.
Virtual reality,
the touch.
A great way to put it, right.
Yeah, I mean, the touch is the is a body. It's the soul connecting. The computer is no touch.
We're
virtual.
Right.
We're having virtual
missing.
Sex.
Yeah.
We're doing virtual shopping.
Exactly.
We're doing virtual talking.
Yeah.
What is this virtual?
I don't think people know who their own neighbors are. Nobody meets face to face anymore. And even phone calls are, and remember snail mail? I remember when I used to get Christmas and birthday cards in the mail. Now I get them through email. It's just really cutting us off from each
it's
other.
It's so even cold.
It is. And, you know, you've got Facebook and MySpace. And I was actually on them all. And I recently took myself off because I felt like I was becoming a part of the problem and not a part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. It's so easy to be sucked into it. It's just amazing.
It is. You could live your whole life now.
And I'm sure that there are numerical vibrational aspects to the whole mechanism of this computer world, besides the obvious,
right.
Some kind of virtual codes, like the Bible code, that are sucking us in at some level of consciousness that we don't even understand.
You know, it's so interesting that you say that. One of my absolute favorite books is a book called Power Versus Force by Dr. David Hawkins. I hope I'm saying his name right. Well, anyway, he talks about the different levels of consciousness that people live at and how, you know, the vast majority of human beings live in fear, or they live with anger. They live way below the consciousness of higher beings like Christ, Buddha, Krishna. And I think the internet is something that keeps us in that sort of lower vibratory field because, one, it doesn't require much of us except to sit in a chair and type. Two, we're not being stretched to go meet people face to face and have to deal with them in human form. And really, we get to live these very isolated, hidden lives that keep us vibrating collectively at a certain level when then you've got individuals that are trying to break out of that level and have a higher vibration. So I think that you're absolutely right about that.
Well, I think that we are actually experiencing a form of entrainment where we are so physically and mentally addicted to these mechanisms that I don't know if it's any worse than any of the drug addictions that people are experiencing.
No, and it's funny because I remember reading an article just last week, I think, about people that were claiming they were becoming addicted to Facebook and how they spent all their waking hours, including time when they were supposed to be at work, on Facebook. And you're right, it is like the new drug of choice for today.
Poof, that's scary.
Social networking, the new drug of choice. Who would have
Come
thought
on,
that
people, get
years
out
ago?
There and dig your souls into the earth and look at the sky and celebrate this great planet. Get off your computers is the message.
Yes. And get your children out there. Another wonderful book I'd like to, it's called Last Child in the Woods, and it's about how kids today have so little experience with nature, and they're suffering because of it, and their kids are going to have even less.
You know, okay, I like that title, and I will look it up personally to find it.
Yes.
And it reminds me, I've just come back from, I conduct spirit journeys to very high energy places, and I brought a group to Abydos in Egypt.
Oh, wow.
Have you been there?
No, I haven't. I don't travel much. I'm a single mom, so I don't get out of my house enough.
Well, it is a remarkable place. And one of the things that strikes me when I go there, which is often, is that the children are so happy.
Really?
They never scream. They don't throw tantrums. They entertain themselves with a straw.
Huh.
They are untainted by the commercial reality, and they're still filled with wonder and joy and innocence, and they just
right.
laugh.
Right.
And
right.
It's such
exactly.
a model for what we look at this as primitive society, and yet aren't we becoming primates again in our
yeah.
lack of that ability to celebrate? In the end, what are we doing here? Some people talk about this being the school of suffering. And I like to look at it as the school of school of possibilities of the potential to just love life.
Right. Well, you know, our perception, our whole world now is our computer or our gadgets. And we're leaving out the whole big world that's out there, including all the other people we could be interacting with nature, where we could actually be listening to our own voices. And I think maybe that's what's at the bottom of all this. People don't want to hear their own voices because they don't want to hear what they have to say to themselves. You know, you haven't lived the life you should be
well,
living.
Well, no doubt, if they look into a flower or a pine cone and they just stop and wonder.
Exactly.
In the question of what is God, who is God, my God is right, my God is wrong, you just look into a pine cone and you see this impeccable mathematical art.
Absolutely.
And you recognize that divinity is laced through every moment of existence, even the darkness.
What will those people tell you, though? The first thing they'll say is, but I don't have time, Patricia, to do that. I have to get here and I have to do this. I don't have time to stop and look at a pine cone. And yet, probably just doing stopping is probably the thing that will save them in the end. Stopping and looking at a pine cone, or the way the rose's petals are positioned. But people will say that is the last thing they have time to do. Priorities are so...
Well, but these are still the same people that are saying they don't understand what's wrong with their lives and they just don't know how to fix it. And so let's just put it out there. Go sit under a tree and look at a pine cone. I'll tell you a funny story. We have a certain kind of broccoli. It's kind of between broccoli and cabbage in Italy. And it is nothing but a collection of these buds of, they call them flowers of broccoli, that are in perfect Fibonacci sequence.
Wow.
Perfect golden mean ratio. Perfect. I mean perfect. I'll send you a picture.
I would love that. I really
fractal.
Would.
I will. Fractal mathematical divinity in the plant. So I'm standing in the grocery store and just blown away by this cabbage or whatever you want to call it. And I had it in my hands and I was putting it up to my eyes and pulling it back, pulling it up and back. And a woman looked at me. She thought I was nuts. And I said, do you see God in this? I think I said, do you see divinity in this beautiful cabbage? And the woman said, see, and walked away like, let me get away from this nutcase.
Uh-huh.
And so you're so right. People just don't take the time to see this beauty. But, man, we have so much to learn from, so much beauty all around us. We just have to take the time. And in taking the time, we are also experiencing the numerology, as you call it, the fractal time.
Well, and also, you know, this speaks to why we are always so keen on avoiding the present moment. We're either worried about the future or we're stressing out over something that happened in the past. So the vast majority of people are entirely missing the magic of the present moment and what's right in front of them, including that pine cone that they're probably so worried about something they have to do a week from now that they just step over the pine cone. They don't even notice it there.
Oh, it breaks my heart knowing the beauty that's there. I want to ask you a deeper question that you cover in the book, which is, boy, I don't know how you can explain this verbally, how the universe can be condensed into numbers and equations.
There's
you go,
a tough
girl.
One. Yeah, this is based on a concept that Sir Martin Rees is a royal astronomer in Britain, and many other astronomers, astrophysicists, and mathematicians, they like to reduce reality, I guess you could say, to mathematical equations. They like to know that there is a mathematical foundation for everything. And what Rees wrote a book called Just Six Numbers that I found absolutely fascinating. It's the idea that all of the chemical interactions and all of the forces behind gravity and matter and energy that are operating in the universe and that have created the planets and galaxies and solar systems and even human life are based on six particular numbers. And we're not talking a number like six or nine. We're talking about numbers that are really more mathematical concepts. And the idea also is that there must be sort of a divine intelligence behind this, because if any of those numbers were more or less than the very precise number they are, we would not be here. Nothing would have happened the way it was meant to. It's almost as if you had said earlier, there is a divine mathematician behind everything. And these figures are so precise that the moment you try to tweak them, it could literally wipe out life. If you take one of these particular factors and you change it just a little bit, solar systems may not have been able to develop, or gravity might not have been able to develop. So it just shows you how behind everything there is a very precise planning, architecture, blueprint, masterpiece, whatever you want to call it, that speaks to the idea of intelligent design.
Yes, indeed. And I think that this is a very interesting point. We hope to God that the physicists don't figure out this formula and start playing with it.
Yeah, that's really something, too, is that why do we always have to mess with things? Just leave well enough alone. We're not as smart as whatever put us here, you know?
Really. Just to let go to, well, some people call this letting go to God. That word God kind of befuddles me. I just like to think of just honoring the divine mathematician. Because,
Right. Baby,
if you ever question, is there a God, is there a higher intelligence, you only have to look at that pine cone, at that flower, at that outrageous cabbage.
Exactly.
Much less the more complicated aspects of that simple order. And
right.
You know without a question of a doubt that there is a great musician orchestrating all life on this planet and most likely everywhere else as well.
Right. And whoever that is or whatever that is very detail-oriented. It's all in the details.
Marie, what do you believe lies ahead as from your perspective of this fractal time and the things you've talked about regarding singularity of events? How do you perceive 2012 and where the whole planet, individual, life are headed?
Wow, that's a mouthful to try to answer.
Yeah, I don't ask easy questions.
No, you don't, but this is what people are thinking about. And for me personally, I don't think it's the end of the world by any means. The Maya never intended it to be thought of that way. I do think, though, it is going to be a time of transformation, both personally for a lot of people, individually, and collectively, because if you look at everything that is happening now, we are in that sort of resistance stage that comes before any great change. Anybody who's ever made a change in their life knows that right before you do it, you meet a huge amount of resistance. And that's what I think is happening now in the years leading up to 2012. We're in the resistance period. We're fighting everything. We feel like things just aren't quite right. The economy is tanking. We've got all of these problems and issues and challenges. So one of two things is going to happen. We're either going to rise to these challenges, get together as a species, and overcome them collectively in order that we can all grow and expand and become higher beings of consciousness, or we're all going to end up killing each other because of the stress and the anarchy and the fear and the confusion and the greed and, you know, you've got fresh water to drink and I don't, and you have gasoline to run your car and I don't. Those are the two paths that we're going down. I want to personally think that it's going to be the former and not the latter.
Do you believe it?
I do. I think that people, when pushed, when their backs are against the wall, that they do come out not just fighting, but they come out more reasonable. They come out more connected. People band together. I think it's going to be really challenging, very challenging over the next few years. But ultimately, I think what the Mayan and other cultures that have talked about these great cycles referred to was that we are going to go through hell and then we're going to get to heaven. We're going to go through the resistance, and then there's going to be a great change, a great transformation. And we will go up to that next level of being. And then, of course, at that level, we'll meet new challenges that we'll have to overcome. So I'm very positive about it. I don't have any gloom and doom fear about 2012 at all.
I don't either. In fact, in my work, I talk about the next dimension of being the dimension without time, because if we look at the Mayan calendar, what happens here is that time ends. And this
right.
has been interpreted by so many as the end of everything, the end of life, but it's
exactly.
the message is the time calendar ends. And I do really, really believe that we are moving toward a new reality where there is no time. As hard as that is to imagine,
right.
a time of absolute synchronicity. Like
that
you were talking earlier when you said going from 25-year cycle to 10-year cycle to 5 to a month, going to zero time.
Exactly.
Immediate.
And it could be, you know, physicists will tell us that there is no such thing on the quantum level as linear time. That's a construct of our human brain, that we have to create linear time to understand the course of our lives. But you're very right. We could be leading up to a point where linear time becomes an old idea, an old concept that no longer suits us. We realize that we have access to past, present, future all at the same time. Our psychic abilities become more active. We become more consciously aware. So, yes, that absolutely does fit into the fact that even scientists say time is a construct of the brain.
And if you look at the Mayan calendar, it is circular. It is the depiction of cyclical time.
Right. Yeah.
It looks like what I perceive was what's happening to us now, spinning into a vortex, spinning into timelessness, the epicenter. It's really very, very important to observe that wonderful calendar and to get your impressions of it, I think, without even the rational understanding.
Right, right. And I always encourage people, too, to just look at the calendar and not, don't focus yet on all the different interpretations. Just take a look at the images and the glyphs that are on the calendar. And probably on an intuitive level, we will understand what it's trying to tell us. We rationalize, we intellectualize way too much. Maybe the idea is to be quiet, take a look at something, and like you said, like the pine cone, just sort of see the divine pattern in it.
We certainly do flow together on our experience and visions of how the universe works. It is a delight to have you on my show, and I'm definitely going to have, when will your new book be out, did you say?
The Resonance Key will be released, I believe, August 1st. So absolutely, I would love to, and hopefully Larry will be able to be on too. He's a great guy that I teamed up with, and we're going to be doing more books of this nature, so we would definitely love to talk
about
Resonance.
Okay, well, you tell him the next time we want you, we could do a three-way, I hate to use this.
I know.
Three.
It would be great.
We are capable of doing a conference call, so we'll have you both on, because I'm sure that he will bring incredible insights into incredible conversations.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have any driving message that you want to leave people with regard to their role in this process and their approach to that moment of shifting?
Right, and it's funny because I could go on and on for several minutes telling you the answer to that, but I have found that only two words really suffice for me. I would like to tell people, pay attention. I think people need to pay attention to the present moment, to the world around them, to their inner voice. Everybody is equipped with higher wisdom and an intuition that will tell them exactly what their role is in all of this, what they need to do, what they should not be looking at. Discernment is another big thing. So, yeah, pay attention, people. You will discover your role. And listen. Don't try to intellectualize or rationalize that little voice away, because that little voice is more important than all the big voices that are coming at you. So pay attention.
And pay, indeed, and another message that I would like to put on to that is don't give your power away to the voice of others.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because so many people now are in stress and fear, and they're turning to every level of healers, psychics.
Right. Everybody wants to be saved.
Numerologists, whoever, diviners.
Right.
Looking for the answer, and this answer is within you.
Exactly.
And I'd like to express one very important thing, which I can't drive home enough. Getting there is just as beautiful, if not more, than being there.
Exactly, the journey.
If you think about the Egyptians, for example, and their process of initiation, the going was just as remarkable as the arriving.
Exactly.
So if we can turn this obsession with 2012 into an understanding that we are there, we're moving into it, we're going through it, and there will be a new reality or a different vibration once we do pass through that.
Exactly. And it is a journey that... It should be an exciting journey, not one that fills you with fear.
Oh, it is an exciting journey. It's
yeah.
a marvelous, exciting, wondrous, beautiful world. And we remember that we chose to be here right now.
Absolutely.
So wake up, everybody.
Yes,
and unfortunately, yeah, did you have one last thing to say, Marie?
No, I just said wake up and pay attention.
Wake up and pay attention. Wake up and smell the coffee.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, I have to say goodbye to Marie. The time has flown as usual. No pun intended, considering we've been talking about time.
Exactly.
Her wonderful book, I really want you to go out and get this book, 1111, The Time Prompt Phenomenon, co-authored with Larry Flaxman. Please give him my love and tell him that I look forward to speaking with him as well next time.
Absolutely.
And for all of you out there, remember, Marie G. Jones has been my guest. Her website is www.mariedjones.com. We never talked about Para Explorers. We'll do that next time. www.paraexplorers.com. Marie, I have a feeling this is going to be the beginning of a long and illustrious friendship.
I hope so. That would be wonderful, and I agree.
You are a true kindred spirit.
Thank you so much
for being with me in this hour.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay, everybody, that's it for today. I thank you for tuning in. Always reminding you to move past that box of convention. Once you get out, you'll never fit in again. Beyond the Matrix, this is Patricia Corey saying goodbye. Talk to you next week.